Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a very happy Eagles football Sunday. Eagles defeating the Browns today, 29-10. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz. This is PhillyFanatics.com. This is Philly Sports Talk. And we are celebrating the debut of Carson Wentz. And, Gordon, you know, there's a whole bunch of things to talk about in this game, but obviously the main focus was on Carson Wentz and his debut. And with, 23 college starts and one preseason game under his belt, the question is, was he ready? And, Gordon, easy verdict, I think. Was Carson Wentz ready for his debut?
He was. I mean, it wasn't the toughest opponent, but it's still an NFL team. And Cleveland has more problems on offense than they do on defense. They were a tough team to establish a run against. And the Eagles went to the run enough to let him manage the game. And, yeah, I mean, he passed his first test, I would say, with flying colors. Probably, there were some peaks and valleys within the game, just like there's going to be some peaks and valleys within the season. But you can see the talent, the confidence, the leader, the way he commands the huddle. It is exciting. I don't want to get too excited, but it is exciting.
Right. I mean, Jordan Matthews said after the game, it ain't the Super Bowl. just keep that
right,
in mind.
Right.
But he did, I think we have Josh Lansbury on the phone. Josh, are you there? No, I guess not.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, hold on.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hey, Josh. Josh, Gordon was just talking about Carson Wentz's debut, and let me just focus on, for you, the two touchdown passes he threw. He threw for 278 yards, more than any rookie quarterback in Eagles' debut. When we're looking at what Carson Wentz could be, I guess the two touchdown throws, the one to Jordan Matthews and the one to Nelson Aguilar, how did you feel when you saw him make those throws?
I felt great. I mean, they were perfect throws, right on the money. They couldn't be thrown any better. I mean, they were right, as I said, right on the money, right to the guys. They were open, or they weren't that open, rather. I should say they got open after he threw the ball to them. And it's encouraging. I talked about last week how one of the weaknesses of his team is the wide receiver core, how they, Nelson Aguilar didn't have a great rookie season. He was hurt a little bit and didn't have a good preseason. And Jordan Matthews had a lot of drops. The Eagles actually led the league in drops last season. So the wide receiver core was in big question. And Jordan Matthews had a pretty good game. He dropped his first pass, but then he had a pretty really good game after that. And Nelson Aguilar had a pretty good game too with a few catches and a touchdown grab. So it's only the first game. It was against the Cleveland Browns, but I heard Darwin Walker, former defensive player for the Eagles, after the game in the post-game press conference or the post-game wrap-up, say something that I was actually thinking the same thing, which is pretty funny. He said, "I don't care if they're playing a New Jersey high school team. I've never seen a better performance by a rookie quarterback in his first game, in his first outing." So I think it was right on the money that he said that, that you can't get overexcited I think it will be a bigger test against the Chicago Bears next week. And the Eagles have a pretty tough schedule, even though they're only 7-9 last year. They still have a pretty tough schedule, and we'll see how he does the rest of the season. But he's had a great start. The Cleveland Browns might go 2-14 or 3-13, something like that this year. But once again, even though they were playing the Cleveland Browns, he seemed poised. He had a really good game. As you mentioned, 288 yards. I think the announcers jinxed him when they said he was going to become the first quarterback since Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III in their rookie season threw for 300 yards in their debut. He was 12 yards short of that, so he just missed that. But he did go 22 of 37, which is pretty good. He did have a 101 quarterback rating, which is really good. So overall, he had a great game. I was really impressed. And I think that another thing that I was impressed with, just the last thing I'll mention, is his post-game press conference. I watched that whole thing, and he seemed really poised. He was confident. He said he wasn't nervous, and he had just had a good mental outlook, and that's what you want to see in a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to ask Gordon about the poise in just a minute. Although since you brought up RG3, I will say that if you want something to temper your enthusiasm, you have to remember he was the number two pick in the draft in 2012, and you know, and had a terrific rookie season, and now for a number of reasons, one of which is injuries, you know, he's trying to resurrect his career with the Browns, and not that it's all his fault, but you know, that's a tough road to go down. So we can't get too excited. Gordon, before I ask you a point, we do have a caller on the line. Caller, last four digits, 1789. Do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, hi, this is Bill. I think less than all the comparisons to other number two picks and Donovan McNabb and all the other stuff and great quarterback rating, those are all important. I think the most fascinating thing I see here is he threw 20 passes in the NFL preseason or 25 passes. He didn't work with the receivers. He didn't have any prep time over the last month. And he mentally prepared. I don't know how you mentally prepare for the speed of the NFL, but he sure did it. And I think that's probably the most impressive thing I saw today.
Yeah, Gordon, why don't you, because that's where I was going to go with the question. So, Gordon, why don't you take Bill's comment. How impressed were you with the poise that and presence that Wentz showed in his NFL debut after not having, as Bill pointed out, you know, he only played one preseason game?
Yeah, I think the caller hit the nail right on the head. I mean, I was concerned with, you know, Jordan Matthews. Yeah, I think he spent some time in the offseason working with Sam Bradford. So, you know, here he is now thrown with a guy that, you know, he wasn't planning on being the quarterback. Jordan Matthews missed a whole preseason with an injury. Drops his first pass, and I'm thinking, well, you know, there's not going to be much of a connection here. And then they just hooked up the rest of the game, and I think a lot of it was just Wentz, you know, reading the defense, putting it right on the numbers for Matthews, almost making it impossible to drop, you know, and Matthews did a nice job, you know, making some nice catches as well. And, you know, same thing with Ertz, you know, Zach Ertz, you know, he had a nice game, and it seemed like, you know, Wentz had, you would have thought that Wentz and Zach Ertz been playing together for, you know, for 5 years, you know, the way they connected, especially on some key plays. I mean, really where this game turned, the Eagles went for it on fourth down at like the 40-yard line, and he hit Ertz over the middle. Barely got the first down, and then right after that, he had Aguilar. I think it was a play or two later, he had Aguilar for the touchdown. So, just the fact that he hadn't really worked with these receivers, just like the caller said, Matthews hadn't even been. I'm sure he practiced pretty hard the team this past week, but it's not the same as all training camp and preseason games and a lot of that to really get your timing down. The things move so fast out there, and to get your timing down and hit these guys in stride. You know, with they're able to run after they catch the ball. There are a lot of impressive things, and a lot of that speaks to his poise. I don't think this was a big stage to walk into a sold-out stadium, and you know the way the Eagles fan base is, and to walk into that stage in that situation, September 11th, 15th anniversary, vice president in the crowd. I mean, there's just so many things going on, and just to walk onto that stage and really, you know, not shrink in the limelight. He stepped up to the moment, and I think that says a lot about him.
Hey, can I just add one more thing, Bill?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill. Absolutely.
In addition to the other stats that are all positive, most importantly, obviously, is no turnovers, what percentage of the plays he ran were audibles? It's not appearing in any kind of stat sheet, but he caught his own play so many times that you could see him change the play of the line of scrimmage. That's just unheard of for a rookie. Certainly under Chip Kelly, they couldn't do that at all, but he just stepped in and, like, he knew the playbook so well that he was prepared to make a change to the line of scrimmage and had the guts to do it and was successful doing it. I think that's something that get overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, I think Doug Peterson, the way he described it in the postgame is, you know, they'll give him two plays, but one's the original play and one is something he can check off to. I think the most obvious case where he definitely completely changed a play was that one with Matthews, and I think it's in the second quarter. It ended up in the field goal for Sturgis. They were around the 35-yard line, and he clearly checks off and changes the protection and goes from under center to back in the shotgun and finds Matthews cutting across down toward the right side for, I think it was 27, 28-yard gain, took him down the 7-yard line. That was one where he clearly did. Yeah, you're right, Bill. For him to have the confidence to do that as a rookie in his first game, really remarkable. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. We do have another caller on the line. If you have a question, last digits 4448. And Josh, we'll let you take this one. Caller, do you have a question? Okay, we'll check back with you in a little bit. Josh, Gordon alluded to. Let me switch gear. We did a little Carson Wentz. Without me leading you, what else were you impressed with from the Eagles in this game?
Well, I'm not really a stats guy per se, but I'm going to throw a bunch of stats out there because, you know, there's the line, stats don't tell the whole story. Well, in this game, I really think they do tell the whole story. I mean, I think that the looking at some of these stats, the passing, the Eagles were 270 to 168 against the Browns. Completions 22 out of 37 to 12 for 26. And some of the other ones, one of the big ones, which you didn't see under Andy Reid a lot, that I think Doug Peterson had a great first game. Don't forget, you have a rookie quarterback in his first game. You also have a rookie head coach in Doug Peterson. So rushing attempts, 34, passing attempts, 37, almost 50-50, and that's great balance. And then one of the biggest ones, which Chip Kelly said was underrated and said didn't matter in his press conferences all the time, which I totally disagree with him, is time of possession. When you win the time of possession battle, more often than not, you're going to win the game. And look at this comparison, 39 minutes and 20 seconds for the Eagles, 20 minutes and 40 seconds for the Browns. And the Eagles win 29-10. They totally clobber them in this game, winning by 19 points. So I think that if you look at one other stat that's a negative for the Eagles that they could work on, they had 7 penalties for 46 yards. The Browns only had 4 penalties for 15 yards. That's one negative stat. But besides that, the rest of the stats look pretty good for the Eagles, and I was really impressed with the victory overall.
Thanks.
And no turnover.
Gordon,
no turnover
is very important. Absolutely. Gordon, I want to ask you about the defense, but first, what was the atmosphere like down there since you were at the game?
Very juiced up. There was definitely a sense of renewal in the air. You know, I think that last year you could kind of sense frustration building, you know, as things started to go a little south under Chip Kelly. And it was definitely, you know, there was just a new sense in the air. I mean, there was a lot of Wentz jerseys. People were very excited to see him. Got a big cheer when he came on the field. You know, you could almost – it first kind of hit me right there. When he started the game and how juiced up people were to see him come on the field, and it was kind of an emotional thing, you know, to see this guy start his first game and you're there seeing it. You could almost understand, you know, while I questioned the decision to start him over Chase Daniel, I kind of right there just hit me. I got it. I got why they did it, and you just hoped it worked out, and it did work out. I mean, there were some peaks and valleys in the game, but you know, it did work out. It was a great atmosphere. I mean, people were very positive and supportive of the team. And you know, the only time people really got upset was when, you know, there was that really the Cleveland's only touchdown was the result of a very shaky pass interference call. I don't know how what the announcer said on TV about it or how you guys saw it on TV with more replays and, you know, on Malcolm Jenkins that kind of set, you know, the Cleveland got a fresh set of downs at like the 1 or 2 yard line. On that same play, Vinny Curry was held like unbelievably. You could see that in the stadium. The whole stadium groaned when it happened and you expected a flag to come out and it didn't. And then you see the interference. And that's really the only touchdown Cleveland got right there, you know? So, you know, if there's a hold there or if that's just not called an interference, that's a field goal. So, you know, other than that, everybody was behind the Eagles. There was no reason to boo, and nobody booed, and everybody was up on their feet on third down. Or, you know, it was really I was standing up as much as I have been at a game in a couple of years. You know, in a lot of situations. Yeah.
They didn't show I'll tell you the truth. They didn't show a good angle on that pass interference play, but both announcers thought Malcolm Jenkins got there early. That's all I can tell you. And like I said, they didn't show a great. The angle they showed, you saw like the receiver's head get knocked forward before the ball ever got there, but they didn't really show a great angle on it, so I can't say that it was definitive from what they showed.
I could just say that Vinny Curry was manhandled, so at best it should have been offsetting penalties and a down over. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask you about the defense because I know, you know, all the focus is on Wentz here, and obviously with his debut and being a number 2 pick overall. Certainly, that's where it's going to be, a quarterback position. But according to the Browns did not have a first. Josh cited the time of possession. A part of that is the Browns didn't have a first down until the second quarter. And really, like you said, the only touchdown was set up by a penalty, and people forget this. The first half it was pretty competitive. Actually, through about the midpoint of the third quarter, it was a very competitive game. The Browns at one point were trailing 10-7 and driving, and Rodney McLeod in his own Eagles debut picked off a pass. But Gordon, how impressed were you? What did the defense do well against the Browns today? So to bottle them up, I know they're not the best team in the world, but what did they do to bottle them up?
Well, one thing I felt they did well, or even though, you know, it's a negative and a positive, I felt like they were having some trouble getting to RG3 early in the game. And you talked about when they were driving and after the Eagles jumped out to a lead, the Cleveland kind of got back in the game, and I kind of felt like, you know, where's the pass rush that we saw all preseason? I know he's a somewhat mobile quarterback, not as mobile as he was, you know, before his injury, but he's a tough guy to kind of track down, but you would have liked to seen that same pass rush at least to make him hurry the ball a little bit, and we really didn't see it. But as the game wore on, you know, they ended up getting three sacks in the second half, and I thought that was a real positive. You know, that they found a way to get to him with the front four. I mean, it was Fletcher Cox, Connor Barwin, and Brandon Graham got the sack, so you didn't have to bring a blitz. You didn't have to do anything like that. So another real positive from the defense, the tight end, he's probably not a big name around the league, but the tight end for Cleveland, Gary Barnage, I mean, he had a ton of catches last year. I mean, it was really – I don't have the number in front of me, but it was – you're talking about 70, 80 catches. He had a lot of catches. They held him without a catch today. And, you know, that's – you know, you can directly point that on, you know, whether it was the linebackers, the safeties. Again, I would have to kind of have to go over the game, look at it again, which I did tape it, of course, to kind of see who had the coverages on him a lot of the times, or if they were keeping him in the block, maybe they were keeping him in the block more, and that's why there weren't sacks early. But, you know, the fact that they held him without a catch, he was a guy that really had me concerned going into the game, because we talked about time of possession, and time of possession could have flipped a little bit if Cleveland used their tight end to their advantage, and he's a good one, if they used him to their advantage to, you know, get some first downs and move the ball, you know, then you're talking about not the lopsided time of possession as it was. You know, Josh cited the number, you know, how much the time of possession, how tilted it was, but it really felt like that. You talk about the atmosphere in the stadium, it just really felt like the Eagles offense was on the field the whole game. You know, it really felt that way. Yeah. Sometimes you see it after the game and it doesn't really impress you that way, the way the final stats read, but it really felt like they were just dominating the time of possession, almost to the point that for a while it felt like the Eagles should be winning more than they were. You know, for a while it was just 7-0 or just 10-0, and, you know, without Cleveland even getting a first down in the first quarter. So, you know, really, if the defense can keep all their opponents around 10 points every week, you know, as they did this week, granted, they're not a juggernaut offensively, but they are an NFL team, and they kept them around 10 points. If they can do that, you know, whether it's maybe it's a little more 13, if they can keep a team in the teens, they're going to have chances to win games.
Yeah, you know, and Carson Wentz had a terrific game, but I don't think we should lose track of the fact that, you know, the defense and special teams really helped him out here. He played extremely well, but I think, and I might be wrong in this number, but I think I'm right, if you include that last, you know, when they took over the 15 or whatever, I think the Eagles started four drives in Browns territory, which is, you know, always a nice situation for a quarterback, whether it's a guy in his debut or a 10-year veteran. When you can start four drives and the other team's in the territory, that's pretty good. And Gordon, like you said, it seemed like the Eagles were actually controlling the game. You know, and you were getting a little worried that the score was even that close, because it seemed like a more lopsided game than that. I want to give one more chance to the caller, 4448, last four digits. Do you have a question or comment? Okay, that's fine. Gordon, before we move on to another topic, anything else impress you from the Eagles game, or anything of note you want to mention from the game today?
You mentioned the special teams, and I think, you know, one guy that gets overlooked a lot is Donnie Jones, and you know, he really is, for, you know, he's a veteran guy. They brought him in here a few years ago. Kind of, you know, I guess considered the twilight of his career, but as we all know, punters and kickers can last a long time, and you know, he just, You know, he pinned them deep and twice, and a couple other times he almost got it was down at the end zone I was sitting at, and it was very close to, you know, pinning them inside the 5 yard line a couple other times, and you know, and as it was, those were booming punts where at least there wasn't a return, and you know, I think that you know that was a big part of you know their success today. You know, the punter makes it a lot easier for the coverage teams. So that impressed me, and you know, the special teams always impressed me under Dave Phipp, and you know, Darren Sproles had a big return, and one other thing, Darren Sproles, I'd still like to see him and Josh Huff get a little more involved in the offense. Sproles had a couple, one little screen to him was knocked down, which was a few negatives that Wentz had. He had a couple passes knocked down. There was one screen set up for the Sproles that was knocked down that probably would have had a nice gain, and he also dropped a couple. I like to see him catch four or five passes a game this year. So that was one thing I like to see. I like to see the ball. I like to see the manufacture some touches for Josh Huff as well. So those are things to work on. It never goes perfectly. I'm sure those things were in the game plan. They just didn't manifest themselves, you know, once the game began. But I'm sure they didn't plan on Jordan Matthews in his first game after not playing in the preseason having over 100 yards receiving as well. So I guess you got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, and we'll talk more. We do have, because they don't play till Monday night next week against the Bears, we can use next Sunday's show as a little bit of a preview show, so we don't need to talk about next week's game yet for the Eagles. Gordon, I want to shift gears for a minute here. And Friday night, Allen Iverson inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. I believe you covered the team during some of Iverson's career, I believe.
Correct.
And I was down there when Tom Moore was on vacation and stuff like that. Iverson? I thought last week it was for me. He was Allen Iverson. He's on the one hand, he shows up late on Thursday and misses the Hall of Fame, sort of meet and greet session with the media, which is just typical Allen Iverson to show up late and miss scheduled activity. And then he talks to the media, and he's almost in sort of a precursor of his actual speech. He's thanking everybody in the world. He's in tears, emotion, because he's so emotional about it, and you can't help but love the guy. What were your impressions from that and from his speech on Friday night?
It's an emotional thing for a guy to and I think he's gone through a lot of things, you know, in his life emotionally. Probably a lot of things he'd like to do over if he had the opportunity. He was always kind of a lightning rod, a flashpoint for a lot of controversy. I know he's had some financial problems, and he still has some financial problems. So to be, you know, in that point, you know, and I'm sure it hit him hard, and I can't fault a guy if he just wears his heart on his sleeve. He wore it on his sleeve as a player, really. I mean, he just, you know, for all the shenanigans between games and being difficult to deal with in a locker room, and he was pretty difficult to deal with in a locker room. When the lights went on, I mean, he was a gamer, you know, the way he laid it on the line, you know, on the court was the way he kind of laid it on the line at the Hall of Fame ceremony. And the way he was late, like you said, that was Allen too. I mean, I guess a leopard doesn't change its spots. I mean, he might be a leopard that doesn't change its stripes, whatever the saying is. But he might have softened a little bit. He might be a leopard without teeth anymore, you know, but without sharp teeth. But he's kind of learned, but he's still. I guess he's still the same guy. He's still the same guy. I always felt deep down he was a sensitive guy, and he took to heart a lot of things that were written and said about him, and he didn't help himself as well. He kind of exacerbated a lot of those problems, but I think a lot of that just came out in his speech, and, you know, he thanked a lot of people, and I thought, you know, the thing I never thought I would see, you know, was how Larry Brown was, you know, such a part of this ceremony, how he was thanked and Larry Brown, you know, talked at the ceremony, and, you know, Iverson admitted that he should have listened to Brown sooner in his career. And, But he did listen to him soon enough to, you know, win an MVP and scoring titles and get the team to the finals and you know, really kind of hit the pinnacle of his team, really strap a team on his back in a lot of ways. I mean, he had a few other nice players on that team, but, you know, he was really, you know, their only elite player. And, you know, I, as much as, you know, I, you know, on a personal level, he wasn't a fun guy to cover. I'm glad to say now that, you know, it's, hey, I covered the Sixers when Allen Iverson played. He's a, you know, Hall of Fame player with a Hall of Fame coach. And you know, he deserves to be there. I don't know if there's too many people out there that would be in a minority who would say he doesn't deserve to be there. You know, with everything he's been through in his life, I mean, there's a couple of real interesting documentaries out there. Everything he's been through in his life, you know, there's no way for it not to hit him emotionally. So I certainly understand it, and wouldn't expect anything different from him than what happened the other, you know, what happened during the ceremony. But you know, I'm glad to see it. I'm glad he's in, and you know, I'm glad I got to be, you know, in a small way a part of his career. You know, that my career crossed paths with his in some way.
Do you have an Iverson story? A good one from your a personal one? I mean,
You know, the thing was, you never really had much one-on-one with him. I mean, he would only really talk unless a throng of reporters swarmed around him, his locker. And, you know, unless maybe you were from ESPN or something, then he would give them a little bit of time. I remember one time, it was an auxiliary room they did things in. It was kind of like down this long hall. And I just kind of closed the door behind me. I was walking down this long hall toward the room. And it was funny because I think a day or two before, or maybe the season before, I had seen Derek Coleman kind of walking at me. And I'm like, this is kind of awkward. You know, I'm walking. Here comes Derek Coleman. And he gave me like a big warm hello. And like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, good. How you doing? You know. So I'm kind of thinking, oh, well, you know, I've never really connected with Allen, and this is my moment here, you know. And we were walking, and then we kind of crossed paths, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he just looked away and kept walking. So I guess that was my, yeah, but that was it, you know. I do remember just some funny things. I remember, you know, a writer coming in from Japan who wanted to do a story on him, and he just wouldn't talk to the guy. I mean, the guy must have been in town for 3 weeks, you know, and the PR people kept making up excuses, like, come to practice tomorrow, I promise, and then you go to the game that night, and the guy's still there, still wondering, you know, when can I talk to him? And then, you know, the same thing happened with a writer from Playboy, you know, came, and he couldn't get access to him, and it was just, you know, he was a phenomenon, a cultural phenomenon, really, that people would want to come from as far away as Japan to talk to him. And he was either he was doing it on purpose or oblivious or whatever it was, and you know, so it was almost like on press row to kind of see these things from a press perspective, you know. And then, you know, the times, Eric, that you know, they would tell you kind of off the record before a game that he's really banged up and he's not going to play tonight, or if he does play, is it going to be sparingly? Or Brown would say, look, I don't want the other team to notice, but I'm going to try to start him, but I don't know how far he could go. And then he would end up playing 42 minutes and scoring 35 points. And it would happen so much that you wouldn't even listen to you would say, yeah, if they started telling you how banged up he was. So, you know, those are some of the stories that, you know, I'm sure I'll think of something else once I hang up, like it always goes. But
I don't think anyone, you hit on two things. One, his determination, which was game day at least unmatched, and also, he definitely, everything he said, and it goes to the Hall of Fame ceremony, was certainly heartfelt. I'll just tell one quick one. I was only down there, you know, sometimes when our friend Tom Moore was, you know, not doing a game or something, I would fill in. And invariably, something would happen when I was filling in. And I remember, like, one game I was doing, and we can't find Iverson before the game. He's not there. You know, where is he? Where's Iverson? And no one can find him. And then he shows up after the, you know, time when he's supposed to be there. I think it was after, maybe even after 7 o'clock, it was a 7:30 start, or after 6:15, it was a 7 o'clock start. And we're asking him about it afterward, and, you know, he's just completely cornered, has no answer. And then some reporter who will remain nameless said, "Were you stuck in traffic?" And Iverson just looks at him and gets a big smile on his face and goes, "Yeah, that's it. I was stuck in traffic." And, you know, he got it out and I had a big smile. And that was the end of the interview. I do want to thank Josh Landsberg for playing hurt today. No details, but Josh, thank you very much for being here. Carson Wentz's debut. Check out PhillyConnects.com. For those listening live, we're moving into archive now. I'm going to get to Iverson. He was really stuck for an answer about where he was and why he wasn't there on time. And somebody threw him the life preserver with the stuck in traffic. And you just saw the big smile on his face. And, yeah, I was stuck in traffic. That's it. And that was the end of the interview, and he was done. But of course, he went out there and probably played a pretty good game. I don't remember the game exactly. But, he's so great. He's such a great player, and he's such an interesting character. And there's always that what if, you know, what if he had listened to Larry Brown earlier? What if he did practice more? Boy, could he have been even better than he was? But he's clearly a Hall of Famer. I would never argue that. All right, I think it's time for final thoughts. Josh, are you back with us, Josh?
Yeah, I'm here, Eric.
Okay, great. Again, thank you for being here, and lead us off then in final thoughts so you can get off it if you need to.
All right, I'll continue the conversation you guys were just talking about and add a couple things to it. I think that it's very fitting that Allen Iverson goes into the Hall of Fame with guys like Yao Ming and Shaquille O'Neal. For my money, Shaquille O'Neal is the second best center of all time after Wilt, and Yao Ming changed the game. He was, he had some injuries and he only played 7 or 8 years in the league, but he averaged like 19 points and 9 rebounds, close to a 20-10 guy, and just culturally changed the game, brought all this business from China and all these fans, and got the most votes in the All-Star game voting. And Allen Iverson did, not in the same way as Yao Ming, but did the same thing as well, culturally changed the game by his different outfits he wore. He had a rap CD that came out. He got a lot of people interested in the game that weren't maybe interested in the game before he played. And Shaq called him the best little big man, he called him, pound for pound, the best player to ever play in the NBA, Shaquille O'Neal said about Allen Iverson. And for me, Allen Iverson was my favorite player to watch, my favorite player ever for any of the four Philadelphia sports teams. And, I'm a little younger than you guys, so he was in my era. I was, I think, a junior or senior in high school in 2001. Yeah, I was a junior in high school in 2001 when the Sixers had their finals run. So that was just electric. The city was on fire. Everyone had Sixer flags, and it was just very exciting, even though they didn't win and they won game one. And I got to go to game three of the finals at home in Philadelphia. They almost won that game. It was pretty close. So him going into the Hall of Fame is just a special moment. And getting to watch his speech, I thought it was a little bit long. I didn't watch every minute of it, but I did watch a good amount of it. And, he thanked all his people, and he talked about John Thompson saved his life. He had some issues in high school with the law, and he was recruited originally by like every college out there, but then no one wanted to take him. And his mom went to John Thompson at Georgetown and said, "Please take a chance on this guy." And he did. And that totally changed around his whole life. And he talked about Larry Brown and just all the things about Allen Iverson, really special player, really special guy. You talk about some of the negatives you mentioned. If he did practice more, if he did listen to Larry Brown more, maybe he's even better. But as it was, he's just overall just an unbelievable talent, unbelievable player. He's very, very humble, I think. He thanked God for giving him the gifts that he has. And just a special moment for Allen Iverson, a special moment for Philadelphia, a special moment for me getting to watch that, him go into the Hall of Fame. And once again, I think it was pretty special with the class that he went in with Yao Ming and Shaquille O'Neal. So that's my final thought for the day.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Philadelphia, Josh, too, because Iverson certainly was very appreciative, not just with teammates and coaches and everybody else, but really a special connection with the fans of the city. And he talked about that before the Hall of Fame ceremony and certainly at the ceremony. So I'm glad you brought that up. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, I want to piggyback on what Josh said a little bit again about Iverson. I guess one regret in a weird way is that I didn't get to appreciate him as much as a fan because – I had to, be, a quote-unquote professional, because I was covering the team. you know, and it was, you were kind of inside the situation. You know, you had to be objective. It was also a source of frustration, like you said, where he's nowhere to be found if you want to talk to him, or he won't talk unless there's a group of reporters around him. And I think in a lot of ways, if I could have just, if I'd just been a fan, I think I really would have, he just would have been one of my favorite all-time Philadelphia athletes as well. He's up there now, but it's kind of in retrospect. And one more thing, you know, there's one season where I also, the paper I worked for, decided for me to travel with the 76ers. And so I got to, because the schedule was kind of truncated. It was a strike shortened season. So they didn't go beyond they didn't go out to the West Coast or anything anyway. I went as far as like Detroit and places like that. And then Orlando and Indiana and he would light up the spectrum. You know, there's no doubt about that. But he kind of brought an aura to him to these opposing cities. You know, and the Sixers had been a doormat, and I guess this season when I got to travel is when they were kind of turning things around, and they made the playoffs. They beat Orlando in the first round, even though they didn't have home court advantage, and then they beat Indiana. They didn't beat Indiana, but they played Indiana tough in the second round. And, they were a team that, you know, if he had a chip on his shoulder anyway when he played, it was almost like he had two chips on his shoulder when he played in an opposing arena. And just the attitude he would bring, you know, and when a whole arena of 20,000 people, while they're in awe of his abilities, were, you know, rooting against him or rooting against the Sixers, and expecting an easy win, because especially early in the season, well, they're the Sixers, they're the team that was always in the lottery and, you know, everything. And you know, just the way he would play some of those games on the road and with the grit he showed, and pulling out some victories and hitting some big shots and wanting the ball in big situations. That was another special thing, you know, I'd want to add in terms of, the experience.
Okay. So a couple of Allen Iversons. I'm gonna shift and go back to our original topic, football. And I think we've talked enough about the Eagles. I just want to say the NFL as a whole. And, you know, Thursday night, I'll be honest, I forgot the game was on at first. I missed the whole first half. Then I watched some of it, and 21-20 Broncos over the Panthers. So today's really the first big day in the NFL. And you look around, and you have the Bengals kicking a field goal in the last minute to beat the Jets 23-22. You got the Chiefs coming from 17 down in the fourth quarter for a 33-27 overtime win over the Chargers. You had the Raiders winning the game, going for a two-point conversion to beat the Saints 35-34. The Packers, Jacksonville was a good game, a four-point game. Right now, with a minute left, the Seahawks are down 4 to the Dolphins. The Giants are 1 point up on the Cowboys, 2019. There's excitement all over the league, game after game. Or not every game is a thriller, but just excitement all around the league, and I forgot how much I miss football. And I can't believe I missed the first half Thursday, because now that I got to be here today, even though I, you know, spent time writing my story and being on the radio right now, just following the NFL today has just brought that excitement back for me. Maybe, forgot a little bit about how exciting it was to be on Sundays watching the NFL and following the NFL. And I don't play fantasy sports, by the way, so I have no personal stake in any of these games. It's just pure excitement as a fan to watch the NFL and see all the close games and the upsets and everything else. So welcome back, NFL. I'm glad, for all the problems the NFL has, I'm glad you're back. And as I say that, Russell Wilson throws a two-yard touchdown pass as the Seahawks take the lead on Miami. So that's it for this week's show. Thank you, Gordon. Thanks for being here. Great job. Report live from what you saw at the game. Josh, like I said at the end of the regular show, playing hurt this week, and really appreciate you being here. Thanks to Bill for calling in and making some insightful comments. And that's it. So please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Lots of good stuff coming up this week. Eagles-Browns stories up there. We'll have more good stuff during the week. I might have a column on the national anthem, by the way, on the national anthem controversy. So I'm playing with that one right now, just a little preview. A possibility this week. So that's it for this week's show. For Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, I am Eric Fisher. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.